This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, will there be a showdown between Washington and sanctuary cities and states like Maryland, who are threatening to harbor illegal aliens from federal officials? Maryland Congressman Andy Harris is here in just a moment. And new polling shows that while some have tried to portray the conservative House Freedom Caucus, who opposed the not-so-conservative Obamacare replacement plan, as villains, well, they may have just saved the day for the GOP. Chris Wilson with WPA Opinion Research explains later here on Washington Watch. Also, pastors in Texas gave 10 state senators in the Lone Star State a not-so-flattering award, a toilet seat. Houston pastor Steve Riggle will lift a lid on that story for us. All that's coming up here on Washington Watch. If you happen to miss anything on your way home, well, you can catch us later. TonyPerkins.com. Everything's archived right there for you at your fingertips. Again, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. In a White House briefing, Attorney General Jeff Sessions said policies that protect immigrant felons from illegal immigrant felons from immigration laws must not be allowed to continue, saying that even federal funds for law enforcement will be withheld from those jurisdictions if they do not work with federal authorities when it comes to prosecution and detaining them. Here's what he had to say. Here's a clip of what the Attorney General had to say.
Countless Americans would be alive today, and countless loved ones would not be grieving today if these policies of sanctuary cities were ended. The charges and convictions against these aliens include drug trafficking, hit and run, rape, sex offenses against a child, and even murder. Such policies cannot continue. When cities and states refuse to help enforce immigration laws, our nation is less safe. Failure to deport aliens who are convicted of criminal offenses puts whole communities at risk.
And he, in particular, he called upon Maryland to not pass legislation that's already passed the House, going to the Senate, that would essentially harbor these illegal aliens. Joining me now to talk about it is the congressman from the 1st Congressional District of the state of Maryland, Dr. Andy Harris. Congressman Harris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
Now, Dr. Harris, I know you've already released a statement saying that you support the Attorney General in his efforts to essentially go after those who are here illegally and are breaking the law. And this is of particular interest, it should be, to residents of Maryland, given what's happened recently there with the illegal aliens.
Oh, absolutely. Look, the Attorney General is absolutely right on this. If people want to feel secure in their communities, they really need their local government officials to cooperate with federal authorities that are trying to get the criminal illegal alien element out of their communities.
Now, your governor is, I think, in line with what the Attorney General is doing, but it seems that the legislature is trying to push him in a direction he doesn't want to go, if I understand what he has said.
That's right. The governor has taken the common sense approach to this. The law is the law. Immigration law is always federal. It preempts anything any state could do, and that just makes sense. Our national borders have to be protected by our federal government, and the local jurisdictions, some of whom, like my home county of Baltimore County, take hundreds of thousands of dollars in law enforcement grants from the Department of Justice and then turn around and just say, well, but we're not going to cooperate with federal law enforcement officials when it comes to this aspect of the law. That shouldn't be allowed. I think the Attorney General is going to try to put an end to that kind of behavior. And to his credit, the governor thinks that the state legislature is making a big mistake.
I found it very interesting. Already you've had mayors of large cities who have said they want to be sanctuary cities or are acting as sanctuary cities, such as Los Angeles, and others saying, look, you can't take away our money. That's unconstitutional. Well, how can they cry foul and say it's unconstitutional, withhold the money, when what they are doing is unconstitutional in terms of harboring illegal aliens and refusing to work with federal authorities when it comes to the federal law?
Absolutely. You know, this has been tested in the courts, and as long as there's a nexus between that funding, as there is in the Department of Justice, again, where the Department of Justice gives grants to local jurisdictions to help them with illegal immigration and to, you know, the detainer orders and et cetera. And on the one hand, you know, jurisdictions will take it, like again, like my home county, and then turn around and say, well, but we're not going to cooperate with federal officials. Look, the Department of Justice is totally within its rights to withhold those grants. And I suspect there are grants in other departments that, are going to go likewise. I'm sure that if a, you know, a jurisdiction is not making certain that, you know, our welfare payments or our, you know, our assistance payments are, you know, the local jurisdiction is not going to determine that someone is qualified for legal presence in this country, then they're going to, then they should be withholding that kind of assistance from those jurisdictions also.
So, Dr. Harris, what will the Justice Department, or how will the Justice Department go about determining whether or not a city is in compliance with the federal law?
Well, they're going to look at the policies in the jurisdiction, and if the policy is spelled out, again, in contradiction to federal law itself, you know, the federal law says that no local official can instruct a local another local official or a law enforcement officer not to participate with a lawful immigration request. What they're going to do is they're going to look jurisdiction by jurisdiction, look at the public statements of the officials, what's actually being done, what's in their policies, and if they determine that they are not complying with federal immigration law and that they have instructions not to comply, they're going to declare them a sanctuary. Whether or not the jurisdiction itself wants to use the word sanctuary, they're going to declare them, for all intents and purposes, sanctuary jurisdictions and withhold their funding.
So they don't have to necessarily declare themselves to be a sanctuary city, but even if they're on the lowdown on the QT, they're basically passing the word "don't enforce, don't work with federal officials." The Justice Department's going to ferret them out and say, "Well, you may not be claiming to be a sanctuary city, but you're acting like one, and therefore you're out of compliance."
Absolutely, I'm told in my home jurisdiction that the county actually has policies in its police policy and procedure manual that basically instructs them not to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. So even if they don't use the word sanctuary, and look, these local officials are getting very clever. They know that the majority of the American people, by almost a 2-to-1 majority, actually don't want to live in a sanctuary community, so they don't use the word sanctuary anymore.
Right.
But they've instituted policies and procedures where de facto they're sanctuary communities.
So how will the Department of Justice go about withholding or stripping the funds from these local jurisdictions?
Well, they'll make them ineligible to apply for those law enforcement grants that would go to their law enforcement budgets. And in the case, again, like the counties that have actually been bold and hypocritical enough to actually ask for these grants to assist them with their interactions with the federal immigration authorities. They've taken the money in the past and then declared themselves sanctuary. They're going to come back in there and claw back the money, as they should.
So any, I know you mentioned, you know, in terms of assistance payments and other things, do you see Congress taking any action here that would potentially withhold monies from those jurisdictions that are outside of compliance on the issue of immigration, illegal immigration?
I'm not sure Congress has to take action. You know, we have a little high threshold because any action we take, as you know, most actions will have to go to the Senate where they're subject to a 60-vote majority. But we are not going to, I guarantee you, we're not going to oppose the administration when they take such action.
Yeah. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, Congressman Andy Harris of Maryland, my guest. And I know you've got votes coming up, but I want to ask you one other question. I've talked to a number of law enforcement officials who are supportive of what the administration is doing. You know, in fact, I have many in my church, some actually involved in immigration enforcement. They're all, I mean, obviously supportive. But one of the issues that is coming up as there's a whole new approach to this where we're actually detaining and incarcerating these individuals, not catch and release, letting them go. What is going to be done from the federal level to assist the local level in terms of the overcrowding that's taking place now in some jurisdictions?
Well, I think what you're going to see is in the budget request from the administration, and which again, I think will be fully supported in the Homeland Security Subcommittee where I sit, you're going to see the federal government say, you know, on the one hand, we are going to ask jurisdictions to comply, and on the other hand, you know, when they comply, and you know that they're asking them to hold, you know, prisoners, for instance, under detainer requests, whatever, that does cost the local jurisdiction money. I think we're going to make those monies available, and so there's, the local jurisdiction has no reason not to comply with the federal authorities unless they, again, unless they want to, for some reason that, that they're going to have to explain to their constituents why they would want to be a sanctuary jurisdiction.
Dr. Hayes, has there been any discussion in the committee about temporary housing of some of these illegal immigrants that have been detained? Because, you know, part of it is just simply, it's not cost, but capacity of some jurisdictions, because you're bumping the kind of the normal criminals from the local community in order to house these illegal immigrants. And there's really a shortage of jail space, and you don't want to build, you don't have time to build, don't want to build more prisons, but you need a temporary place to hold them.
Well, you know, we do have, as you know, there are private prison facilities. There are methods we can utilize that will take that would provide housing for these detainees. But the answer really is, prompt, to take care of these cases promptly. Reduce the backlog. The administration has asked for more judges, more administrative judges in the enforcement, the immigration enforcement divisions. So you have to move these cases along. And I will tell you what will happen is that, and we're seeing this at the border already, where, you know, the cross-border traffic is down over 50% just in the first few months of the Trump administration. You know, once the word gets out that, you know what, you are going, if you come to the United States illegally, and again, we are welcoming legal immigrants, we welcome with open arms. Illegal immigrants, the word is going to be out. If you come to the United States, you're going to get caught. There's no catch and release. You're going to get caught. You're going to get detained. And you're going to get sent back to the, your country of origin. If that country, because Tony, you and I both know there's some countries that won't take people back, then I think that what the administration is going to do, and I think Congress is going to agree, that we have to begin looking at their foreign aid to those
right,
countries,
right.
Because there are a lot of countries that do that to us.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing what happens when you actually say you're going to enforce the law that is the law. People actually respond. And when, as we saw under the last administration, when you said you weren't going to enforce the law, people responded. I think you're absolutely right. It's already having effect. It's like when you have one of those speed traps. You always slow down when you go into that jurisdiction. So, Congressman Andy Harris, thanks so much for joining us, taking time out from a busy afternoon on the House floor.
Thank you very much. Bye now.
All right. Congressman Andy Harris of Maryland's 1st Congressional District. Look, this is, in fact, one of the things interesting about this is that this is one of the rare areas where the courts have pretty much played hands off when it comes to what Congress has done. Now, not so much when the administration, they're always scrutinizing the executive use of authority. But when Congress speaks to this, this is an area that the courts defer to the constitutional authority of the Congress in setting immigration policy. Big issue. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how this plays out between these sanctuary jurisdictions and the Trump administration backed by Congress. As he pointed out, probably not going to see a lot of action because of the threshold of 60 votes required in the Senate, but simply not detaining, or I shouldn't use that word, stopping the administration from acting could have significant effect upon the illegal immigration. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about the House Freedom Caucus. Did they do the GOP a favor by not passing the not-so-conservative repeal?
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
American Family Radio, equipping you to change the culture.
My name is Teresa. I own a taxi business. I drive all day long. I pick up people, take them to the doctor all day long. One day I climbed into my van, and I never even knew this radio station existed, and it was just on. And I believe with all my heart that God put it on the radio for me. I am a witness for the Lord. I have had lots of opportunity to lead people to the Lord. Listening to your station only gives me more confidence. I have followed in faith by opening this company, and AFR just really lifts me up in spirit and lets me know that I'm doing the right thing. Just encourages me and my clients.
Your partnership makes a difference. Join us for our 3-day share-a-thon starting April 4th. American Family Radio, boldly standing for truth for your family.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. By the way, I just want to remind you, this summer, taking a cruise to Alaska. And you can join us on the Free to Believe cruise. Find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, last Friday, the House Republicans pulled a vote on a proposed health care replacement, repeal and replacement. That, you know, quite frankly, was a big setback for the Trump administration and the Congress. Now, the problem was the plan was really not very conservative, the replace portion. You've heard me talk about this all along. I think they need to go back to the 2015 measure that basically gutted Obamacare, defunded Planned Parenthood for a year, and then come back with one of the well-thought-out plans that they've been working on for years instead of trying to cram it into this shoebox of the reconciliation measure. So far, they're not listening. Maybe you can help them listen. But that's another topic. There have been those that have tried to make the House Freedom Caucus out to be villains for not going along with this when research now shows that they may very well have saved the GOP from themselves. Joining me now to talk about it is Chris Wilson, partner and CEO of Wilson Perkins Allen Opinion Research. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me back, Tony.
So you're finding that though the members of the House Freedom Caucus were actually more in line with their constituents and those who, you know, put the Republicans in control than what the Republican plan that was proposed last week actually was in line with.
That's right. So what the idea here was, we were in the field building a predictive model, not a poll, mind you, but a predictive model of where every American stood on three main issues: Speaker Ryan's AHCA proposal, Obamacare, and then a plan to fully repeal and replace Obamacare. And so what the purpose of doing this, we actually began this process before the vote was pulled on Friday, helping our clients to be able to reach out to those who either had their position or to be able to communicate their position or be able to kind of counter some of the things that were going on with the Democrats flooding the town halls. Well, then Friday happened, And we finished up our observations and running our models and scoring, as you can imagine, scoring every voter in the United States is a bit of a lengthy process. And we decided to just take a look at each Freedom Caucus member's district. And what we found is, with a couple of minor exceptions, and I think those exceptions are fully explainable considering American Action Network is spending millions of dollars in their districts, American Action Network being the leadership-funded super PAC that was running pro-AHCA ads in Freedom Caucus member districts, is every one of these Freedom Caucus members, and I'll use Mark Meadows, Congressman Mark Meadows in North Carolina as an example, a majority of his constituents were in support of real repeal and replace. And in fact, here's what's most interesting about it, is we found that they were the constituents of these nationally in the battleground Senate races and in these Freedom Caucus members' districts were actually more supportive of Obamacare than they were the Ryan bill. And the simple conclusion, you don't have to be Karl Rove or James Carville or David Axelrod to come to the conclusion that if you've got a national electorate that supports Obamacare over the Republican bill that we were trying to pass, the Republicans were trying to pass, that's not a good place to go into the 2018 elections. And frankly, I would submit that it would have been, since that was one of the key components of Republicans' victories in 2010, 2014, and 2016, it would have been devastating for the Republican Party running in 2018 had this bill passed.
Well, Chris, they're regrouping now. They're coming back with, basically what I'm hearing is a very similar bill. What's it going to take to be in line with what the majority of voters that put the Republicans in the position of the majority? What kind of measure, what kind of bill are they looking for?
Well, it's what's interesting about this bill, Tony, and I think you and I probably align closely with more of the Freedom Caucus members, but the Freedom Caucus was in line with the moderates in the House caucus in terms of where they were on this bill. And that's a remarkable positioning statement in the fact that they started closer to the same place because there was the bill that was pushed through the HCA, Ryan Care, was not, it wasn't a collaborative effort. And the way that we tested kind of true repeal replace is, it won't surprise you, since I served as you mentioned, director of research and analytics for Senator Cruz's presidential campaign, is I took the plan that Senator Cruz had been pushing. And with the way we've phrased it, I mean, we use very simple text when we build these models because we have to collect thousands of observations, which are phone calls in which we ask people a simple question. But a plan that allows for the sale of insurance across state lines, which Donald Trump talked about over and over again, expands health savings accounts, incentivize states to create high-risk pools, block grants Medicaid, and is portable. Now, look, I understand that not every voter understands all of that, but the fact is it is simple messaging that is that allows Republicans to do kind of what the Cruz plan would have done and what many of the other plans, I mean, the original Tom Price plan did most of that.
Right.
And so the purpose of that, that is what Republicans need to do. And if they can just accomplish that much and be able to be on, have the same message that they truly are pushing repeal and replace, then that is where the American people are. And I mentioned the House Freedom Caucus members. This isn't just that. It is a majority of voters in West Virginia, where Joe Manchin's running for re-election. Majority of voters in North Dakota, where Heidi Heitkamp is running for re-election. Majority of voters in Missouri, where Claire McCaskill is running for re-election. Absolutely every single battleground state, even Minnesota, where Republicans have an opportunity to win by almost a 3-to-1 margin. Republicans support or voters support repeal replace over Obamacare.
See, that's what doesn't get the Republicans are timid about going into those blue states where you have they voted for Trump, but you've got Democratic senators up for re-election, and take this issue straight to the voters and force the Democrats to come along with a true replace package of Obamacare. That's what I just don't get it. Chris, we're out of time. I want to thank you as always for joining us. Great to have a conversation with you today.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, Tony. Thank you.
All right, Chris Wilson, to find out more about their work, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. All right, more to come here on Washington Watch. We'll talk with one of the courageous Texas Five pastors from Houston, Texas, who gave an unusual award to 10 state senators in the Lone Star State. toilet seats. Yeah, you heard me. We're going to talk about it with Pastor Steve Riggle when we come back. Don't go away. There's much more to come here on Washington Watch.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, we got an unexpected drop in the trade deficit. The trade deficit fell sharply down to $64.8 billion. That is off last look of $69.2. Now, here's the thing. They were only expecting $66.1. So it looked like most economists surveyed were expecting a drop in the deficit, but they were about $2 billion off. It fell lower than they were expected. That should be perceived as good news. So Ford stock is up over 1%. Why? Because Donald Trump, President Trump, tweeted out that he had good news coming out today in reference to Ford and jobs, and their stock immediately jumped. Obviously, it's going to have something to do with an expansion of some plants or maybe a change in some plants in Mexico coming back home. But that was pretty interesting to see Ford increase in such dramatic fashion. It looks like crude oil ended lower on the first trading day of the week. Why? Because there is pressure that there is going to be increases in oil rig count here in the U.S., and there is now some uncertainty as whether or not OPEC will extend its production cuts. Listen, OPEC is losing market share big time. Can't imagine them extending it too much longer.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the website tonyperkins.com. All right. The Houston Five, the pastors in Houston, Texas, are at it again, standing up for the rights of women and children, this time weighing in on Senate Bill 6 in a very large gathering of pastors and other leaders. They issued a challenge to the state legislature to follow the Senate's lead and adopt Senate Bill 6, the Texas Privacy Act. You've heard us talk about that, which would essentially say that state entities and schools cannot have these gender-confused shower and locker room policies that were pushed by the Obama administration. Well, they in so doing, they issued or gave awards to 10 state senators who voted the wrong way on Senate Bill 6. The awards that they presented to them were toilet seats. Yes. I just wonder if they're going to hang those in their offices or not. Anyway, joining me to talk about it, Pastor Steve Riggle from Houston, Texas Grace Church, who was a part of leading this effort. Pastor Steve, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Glad to be with you.
All right. The response so far. I watched the event. I thought it was right on. I thought it communicated a strong message. What have you heard thus far?
Well, the word is just getting out. For example, on my personal Facebook, in just a few hours, there's been almost 7,000 views, and we just got off a call with the largest number of megachurch pastors in the state that I've ever been on with Lieutenant Governor in regard to this. So we're really stepping out there. Here's the thing. SB6 will keep this battle from being fought school by school, district by district, city by city, all across the state. You know, in Houston, we spent 2 years. We had sermon subpoenas. We had 50-some thousand signatures that took tens of thousands of man hours in a referendum that are our mayor laid aside all of that. We went through two trips to the Supreme Court, over $600,000 in legal fees to win. And then they started this battle in schools and cities across the state. SB 6 will fix that.
Right, and that's what I, when I was there, testified to the fact that the Trump administration, by rescinding those orders of guidance from the Department of Education, Department of Justice, have left it to state officials to decide. And that is exactly what the officials in Texas are doing, is saying, look, we're going to have a uniform policy, and it's going to be a policy that protects women and children from these crazy bathroom policies. Now, Pastor Steve, in your announcement from the pastors, you recognized, let me go back to the vote in the Senate a couple of weeks ago. SB 6 voted in the state Senate. It passed 21-10. You presented the 10 who voted on the wrong side of this with toilet seats. The message there.
Well, obviously, you look at this and go, I said this on the video, why would pastors do this? And I said, it's because we're fed up. Here we are in Texas with an overwhelming majority of Republican conservative leaders, and we hear that many of the Republican representatives are, and this is a term one of them said to me, squishy. And my question was, how in the world can Republicans, well, and Democrats, not stand up to protect women in the most private of all settings? It just, so, you know, you're kind of in a crazy day, and you just go, F.N. Williams, who led the deal, he's 88 years old. He's been a pastor for 60 years. He was one of the, marched in the civil rights thing. He said, I never thought I'd have to stand up to protect women and girls in their most private setting in my whole life. So here we are, and I guess we have to fight this any way we can. And it seems to me, if these legislators don't have enough courage to stand up, then we're giving their opponents something to use against them when they come up for re-election, and they can use that sign with their face surrounded by a toilet seat as their campaign poster.
And it's not going to stop with the Senate. You have issued a challenge here to the House members who will not stand up and defend the women and children of Texas. They're going to get the same recognition.
That's exactly right, because now the Texas House, which is overwhelmingly conservative Republican, need to stand up and push this through. And so I just encourage people who care, particularly people in Texas, to contact their state rep, to contact the people on the State Affairs Committee and say this bill has to make it to the floor for a full vote.
Well, we will help get that word out as well. Pastor Steve Riggle, thank you so much for joining us today. And once again, thanks for your leadership.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Folks, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can actually watch the video of this event where these pastors got together. And let me just say this again. This is where you say, what is a pastor doing talking about bathroom policies? This is what a shepherd does. A shepherd protects the sheep. A pastor is interested in what happens beyond the walls of his church, what happens in the community, and takes that kind of bold leadership. And Pastor Steve Riggle is one of those guys. He's a Watchman pastor. And there are many of those pastors across the country. In fact, pastors, we've got a pastors conference coming up in just a couple of months that you might want to be a part of. I'll talk more about that when we come back. Also, we'll be getting to the phone lines here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
American Family Radio, impacting lives.
Yes, my name is Tina, and I am from America, Kansas. And the last 3 years, the Lord has just really been moving in my life. But what I wanted to say is, you guys are just really on the ball. You're changing up the ministry in such good ways, and it's just wonderful. It's so profound to me. I downloaded the app because I wanted to listen to AFR Talk. We only get the music station here. So I listen on the app all the time. And I wanted to say, too, that Abraham Hamilton, having him on board is just awesome. You guys are just adding so much to the ministry. I just appreciate it so much. And so I just thank you so much for your ministry. And I'm always praying for you guys. And thank you so much for AFR.
Your partnership with American Family Radio keeps your family informed on the issues of the day. Join us for our three-day share-a-thon beginning April 4th.
To Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. I was mentioning before the break, pastors. We have our Watchmen on the Wall conference coming up. It's a briefing just for pastors coming up the end of May. And this is a great time just to get with pastors from usually 45, 48 states are here for 2 days. Starts on a Wednesday night, goes Thursday, and half day Friday. End by lunch on Friday. You can be back home Friday night. But it's a great opportunity to hear what's going on, to be with like-minded pastors. It's Watchmen. And this is raising up the Watchmen to stand on the walls and to give warning. So if you'd like to find out more about how you can be a part of that, we'll be talking about the Culture Impact Teams, which is a great way for a church to be engaged and involved in their community. It's what Pastor Steve and other pastors across the nation are doing. And I hear so often from people saying, I wish my pastor was more involved. Well, this is a great way to get them involved. If you're a pastor, I encourage you to go to the website, tonyperkins.com, or just email me, tonyperkins.com. We'll get information to you. Or maybe you want to send your pastor. Great opportunity. We underwrite most of the costs. It's a $299 registration fee. But it's for senior pastors. This is for pastors, okay, not laymen. It's all pastors. So if you'd like to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, or just email me, tony@tonyperkins.com. Okay, this is what I want to open the phone lines. We had a great conversation yesterday on a non-policy issue, but today I want to kind of go to the policy issue. We were talking with Dr. Andy Harris earlier about the sanctuary cities. He represents part of Baltimore County, Maryland, which is, you know, one of these areas that has been harboring, quote unquote, illegal aliens. Yesterday, the Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, saying that they're going to be aggressive. The Trump administration is going to be aggressive in removing grants, federal funding from law enforcement agencies that refuse to work with federal authorities when it comes to dealing with illegal immigration. So here's the question I have for you. Would you like to see the Trump administration get aggressive with these jurisdictions that do not want to enforce the immigration law? you like what you hear. You want them to get more aggressive in what they're doing to force these local jurisdictions to comply with federal law. Federal law. That's what we're talking about. Immigration is federal law. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And, of course, one of the things that happened in Maryland was that we had in one of the schools where two 18-year-olds drug a 14-year-old girl into a restroom and raped her, one of them being an illegal alien who was here illegally. I mean, this stuff is being facilitated by the lax application of our laws. And let me just say, let me speak this just for a moment about, I hear all the time about from evangelical and Christian leaders saying, you know, the Bible tells us that we are to love the stranger. You are correct, sir. It does say that. But it also says there is one law for the stranger and one law for, and this was the Old Testament. You see it in Leviticus, see it in Deuteronomy. There's one law for the stranger and for the children of Israel. Now, again, we are not living under Old Testament law. I'm not going to get into a whole theological discussion here, but if we're going to apply the principles of immigration from the Old Testament, and I think we can apply principles. Yes, we open, as Andy said, Dr. Harris said earlier, we open our arms to those who want to come here legally. But as you'll notice, the principles of Scripture require them to assimilate into the culture and the country. That means language. That means the law. And that's not happening. It's not happening. All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Nelson in Texas. Nelson, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you doing? Good afternoon. We listen to your show every afternoon. Listen to Ms. Sandy Rios and Brian Fisher, thank you for letting me in your discussion.
Absolutely.
I think that we are a nation of laws. I think that we, you know, whoever decides and wants to come into this country has to abide by our laws. Whenever we are outside of the United States, in some other countries, we as Americans have to abide by their laws. We can't take our Constitution, can't take our laws to any other countries and tell them I am an American. And this is what in my country I do. That will not be accepted in any other country.
True.
And likewise, I would like to also say I'm from Texas. And for some reason, there is, and I love my fellow Texans. I love Texas. But for some reason, anybody who speaks Spanish is automatically classified as Mexican. Our Texans friends and brothers forget that there's 21 Latin American countries that speak Spanish. Quite frankly, one of them is a U.S. territory. Everybody there is a U.S. citizen by birth.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to say that. I believe that we have to apply what the law says. And that's my point. Thank you for letting me on the show.
Thank you, Nelson. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in. And, you know, this is an issue that Nelson brings up, that automatically when someone talks with an accent or speaks Spanish, and unfortunately, because it's so prevalent, people immediately go to thinking, well, they're here illegally. Well, that's not always the case. Now, I do think that that does speak to the issue of assimilation, where we have some school districts that are literally allowing kids to go through the schools without ever learning the English language. And I know they do pick it up, but they're able to learn in their native language. And that does not further the assimilation. I mean, you have, if a nation is to be unified, it has to have the same language and speak the same language. And I understand you can have a bridge, you know, to help facilitate those who come here legally to learn the language and so on and so forth. But you cannot continue to accommodate other languages. I mean, not and be a unified country. I mean, remember, you know, we're talking Bible here. Let's go back to the Tower of Babel. How was it that God kind of divided them, gave them multiple tongues, changed the language. And when they were speaking the same language and focused on the same things, they were unified and there was nothing beyond their reach. Language is important. Nelson, again, thanks for the call. Let's stay in Texas. Going down the list here, let's go to Kathy. Kathy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I agree with Nelson, and I also, my husband and I, we're the only conservatives in the family on his side, and his family is constantly saying, build a bigger table, not a higher wall, and I keep asking them the same question, do you lock your doors at night? And why do you do that? Because, you know, I have no problem with answering the door when somebody knocks on my front door and wants to come in, and they're invited. But I have a big problem when they're kicking down my back door.
That's
and that's
right.
What illegal immigration is. They're kicking down your back door.
Right. I mean, what's to, if someone comes here, and I'm not saying everybody that comes here with the intent of doing harm and ill. I'm not saying that. Never said it. Won't say it. But by definition, those who come here illegally are already lawbreakers, and you do have those that do come here, breaking the law to get here, that break other laws while they are here. And you're right. You can welcome anybody. You can have a red front door signaling you welcome all those who want to come, but they knock at the door, and you let them in. And we do. America takes more immigrants than any other country in the world. We've always been very generous about that. But we've regulated it so that, again, you're going to hear me say this word, assimilation, it's so critical. So as people come in, we can assimilate them into our society. They can become a part of the fabric of the American family. Well, that assimilation system is broken. It's not working. And, of course, we have those that don't want it to work because there's power in that for some. And I'll be very candid. The Democratic Party's benefited from keeping people kind of in these pockets, these isolated pockets of, you know, hyphenated Americans who don't speak the language and have to rely upon politicians to dole out certain things to them for them to survive. That's not how immigrants originally came to this country. They came here for opportunity. And some still do. In fact, I was amazed during the Obama administration that there were still people who wanted to come here, given how much damage that administration did to this country. But America still is a land of opportunity. You see it all the time. People who come here work hard and are successful. And if they come here legally, I'm all for that. I think they add to the American experience. Kathy, thanks so much for the call. Stay away from those family gatherings, I guess, with your husband's family, I guess. All right, let's go. Boy, Texas has some opinions on this today. Let's talk to Sid. Sid, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you, Pastor Perkins. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. So I just really wanted to really come at it from the angle that why these sanctuary cities have, for one, have the ability to do this in the first place. And the biggest threat is to just remove the funding. I just feel like there should be way more legal action in terms of these mayors and these city officials that are pretty much pushing the opposite direction of where the president is trying to go. And what actions are we able to take as citizens of, if not me personally, but if you are a citizen of some of those cities, what can you do to pretty much align yourself with the status quo?
Yeah, I guess we could call out Goober Pyle. We could do citizen's arrest, maybe. I don't know. Seriously. Sid, the funding is what the Obama administration, excuse me, oh, I'm going to wash my mouth out with soap, with the Trump administration can do. They can immediately withhold these grants because they're not required to give this money. They're just, a lot of these things are applications are made for funding for this project that law enforcement is doing. And they say, no, we're not giving you anything else until you work with us. I don't know the answer to this, Sid, but I also think that, and let me finish that and I'll go to the next one. But I think that if you saw some of these state and local officials that are harboring illegals, helping them break federal law, that they could actually be charged and arrested with crime. Now that will send a message. That's a possibility. You know, I haven't explored that completely, but I mean, that is certainly possible. Now, the other aspect is that it would require Congress, if you want to get more aggressive in taking funding or taking different actions, would require some congressional action, which, as we talked about with Dr. Harris, more difficult because it requires them crossing the threshold of the 60 votes in the Senate. So I think the Trump administration probably going to be as aggressive as they can unilaterally using the authority. And I don't want them to go beyond their authority. I think it should stick with the constitutional authority that is that's vested in the executive branch should be the boundaries. I don't support them doing what Congress should do. All right, going to try to work another call here real quick because we're almost out of time. I'm going to go to Mike in Virginia. Mike, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony.
How you doing?
You stole what I was going to say. You know, they're lawbreakers, and I don't mean the immigrants. I'm talking about our government, and they need to, you know, the peasantry, we get arrested for breaking laws, and these guys with impunity can just break laws, and the federal government just slaps their wrists. Well, we're going to take away some funding from you. They need to clamp down and start arresting them. They're criminals.
Yeah, I'm. If you had one of these mayors that says, you know, we're not going to allow federal officials to pursue or prosecute or arrest or detain illegal immigrants that are in the borders of our city or our jurisdiction, and all of a sudden obviously you have to have probable cause. You've got to show, you know, clearly that they did it and it happened, which wouldn't be difficult. And they were arrested, that would send a very, very strong message to others. Who knows? I mean, if anybody would do it, I think that the Trump administration would. And I will tell you, Jeff Sessions is the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, just a gentleman of a man, right? Very thoughtful, not hothead, not bombastic in any form or fashion. I think he's going to be very judicious in the way he goes about this, but he is tenacious. Okay, and so I have great confidence in the Attorney General that he's going to enforce all the laws justly and fairly. And again, I want to encourage people, going back to Nelson's comment, Lev, let's, even though there's this trend and we've seen this violation of the law and this lawlessness that has embraced our nation for the last 8 years, you know, look, we are a nation of immigrants, and those who are here legally, let's not, you know, jump to conclusions because someone has an accent or maybe speaks another language, they're not here because they shouldn't be here. Look, everybody's welcome. Let's not facilitate the illegal ones, but let's welcome those who come here legally. Plus, it's an opportunity for us as a church to be able to evangelize and have them come here. And the church can play a key part in that assimilation that I talked about earlier that's not working within society as a whole. All right, out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow. I hope you will as well. Until then, yes, you guessed it. Ephesians 6, Paul says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.